Hi, kids. Welcome to Bronco Land. We got some smart ones in the room.
Thanks for listening. I'm Andrew Mason. And as always for this segment, the esteemed, inimitable Andy Lindahl from 760 and 850 KOA. Andy, how are you?
Do you not know me? I'm not esteemed. I'm hated. I don't know what the other word would
loathed,
be.
Loathed.
Yeah, loathed.
Resented. Despised.
Yeah. It's not a positive adjective, whatever you would pick. Does it not feel like forever since we played a football game?
Exactly. It's now been, we're recording this on Friday, so it's been 8 days since the Chargers game. I mean, it's weird. Those games in that short week last week, two games in 5 days, they count for two in the standings. Feels like one game. But unfortunately for the Broncos, it's two because they were pretty much carbon copies of each other, and that's something that since Gary Kubiak came back to the office this week after a week to rest and recuperate following his complex migraine, something that Kubiak's really been hitting and impressing upon his team is that both games were basically the same, and the disappointment that they couldn't fix the glitches from the Atlanta game in time for the San Diego game.
And I certainly understand that. That's how a coach has to feel. I get it. I'm not surprised by it, though. You and I quietly talked about it last week. We were all concerned about the turnaround because you're the traveling team. Now, I don't know how you felt about it. We all talked about it, at least on the radio broadcast. Mm-hmm. There was a lack of energy to start the game, but it wasn't just the Broncos. It was both teams. You could tell both teams.
Crowd, too.
Crowd wasn't into it. And it's interesting, Andrew, because we're now hitting that grind time of year. And I think these Thursday night games become tougher and tougher for teams to play as they have this turnaround. And if you don't believe me, look at a game like last night with the Packers and the Bears, one of the shortest road trips in the NFL that you can have. Mm-hmm. Both teams looked tired, and there frankly was nothing really worth watching until late in that game, much like the Broncos and Chargers.
Yeah, I mean, Aaron Rodgers, of course, it's interesting how he's made the transition to being a dink and dunk passer. Actually, really the demarcation point is the Broncos game last year, but you know, last night that game it didn't feel in any way like the Packers offense of recent years. That was a rivalry game. Bears Packers, even when one team is lousy and one team is good, usually there's a lot of energy around the game. I didn't detect that at all. What's interesting, I was talking with someone else about this today. College just play on Thursday, but they don't have that problem. Some of that, I think, is the fact that one more day does make a difference. Another is that colleges have restrictions on meeting and practice time anyway, so you can't get but so burned out because, you know, you can only have them a certain amount of hours because players have to go to class and study hall and all that. But the college games on Thursday don't seem to have this issue with energy that the pro games do.
You want to know why? They're kids. You know what? When I was 20-something years old, I could play three lacrosse games in a day, wake up the next day, and still accomplish something. And I'm going to add to this. I tell people this all the time, quickly. Look, the pros are the pros for a reason. Mm-hmm. In college, you're not going to go out there and have the same kind of physical week-to-week game that you're going to have every week in the pros. You want to know why? Half the guys that are playing in college are off to be accountants or salespeople or marketing managers or whatever when they're done.
And you have more of them.
Exactly.
You have larger rosters so you can keep guys fresh and keep them rotated in. I mean, you know, Thursday night football in college has been around, I think, like 20 plus years, basically. I think it was a pretty regular staple as early as like 1992 or 1993. In the pros, it's become an every week thing in the last 5 years. They would play some Thursday games before, but I think it's really, you know, It's not what the NFL, I think, wants to have out there, and it's something that I think they're going to have to revisit and discuss. Maybe it's going to be, if you want to keep the Thursday window, maybe you have to expand the season to 18 weeks and give everyone a second bye. There's only been 1 year of the double bye. Of course, that was 1993. And then in 2001, after the 9/11 attacks, there was a week off, so everyone got 2 weeks off in the course of that season, but it was unscheduled. But they may have to think about something like the double bye and saying, okay, when you're playing on Thursday, you're off the week before, because it's just week in and week out, it's not a very engaging game. And certainly, I mean, there was other sports competition on television last night, and the NFL, I'm sure, got the best rating, but it wasn't what you'd expect from a Bears-Packers game, one of the best rivalries in football.
Yeah, it's funny. We were talking on our afternoon show that I do with Romy Bean and McCaffrey, and Ed was asking me, as a football fan, he said, are you saying this? Because I've griped in the past. I don't care for the matchups all the time, frankly. That would be my first starting point. And I get why you're doing the divisional matchups for the most part, because it makes preparation a little easier.
It's also geographic proximity. Do you remember when the Jets came out here in 2011 and played the Broncos? I mean, they don't do that anymore.
Right.
But that was a Thursday night game. They're coming. They're flying all the way to Denver on a short week. And, oh, by the way, you've got Tim Tebow, quarterback who is so far outside the mold of an NFL quarterback. And the Jets, you know, that was you know, one of the better defenses that Rex Ryan had with the Jets. And their offense couldn't get started. Their defense buckled at the end, and they lost the game. Certainly the Broncos had a huge home field advantage in that game, in part because the Jets had to fly, 1,400 miles, 1,500 miles on a short week. At least they don't do that anymore.
They don't, but for the most part, look, nationally, I don't need to see Jacksonville, Tennessee. With all due respect, I don't know how much the nation is gripped by, without the presence of Peyton Manning, the Broncos and the Chargers. You know, It was great when it was Manning Rivers. I get why you want to see that more often, but that's not the case anymore. I don't need to see the Packers-Bears. I don't need to see the Cowboys-Giants. Now, I get these are massive TV markets that help lead to your ratings. That's why you're going to put them there, on and on and on. But to me, the quality of football, more than anything, the quality of football is not good. If you want to know why, there's been a lot written about the ratings this week. You know why they're dropping? Now, it's funny because you look at it on Sunday night. Look, the ratings are down, but they're still monstrous ratings. People need to understand.
And the share isn't dropping as much as the rating, which also is indicative of wider trends. In terms of people not watching, not sitting there and watching television, live television, as it happens in the same way they used to.
The bottom line is, for me, and I'm an NFL diehard like you, I'll watch it when it's on. I get bored in the off season, I just flip on NFL Network and watch an old game I already know the results to. That's just how deep into it I am. But I don't want to watch bad football on a Thursday. I just don't. There's too much going on in the week anymore. And I know people have said this is never going away. That's probably true. But I'll be honest with you. I do think, as a guy that loves football, I think for the good of the game, you have to think about, I wonder, is the NFL maybe seeing, maybe there was a line for too many national games? Because you know what? You had a Thursday, because of the Jacksonville-London game or whoever's playing in London this week, you've got four national games. You'll have one starting at, 9 a.m., 11 a.m.,
7:30 a.m. Mountain Time.
Okay, so 7:30. My point being, you only have four games all day you can watch, then another Monday nighter. I mean, at what point is it? I think the NFL, one of the reasons why we starved for it was I couldn't get enough of it when I needed it. Now it's almost in reverse. Look, the NBA, the NHL, Major League Baseball, it's on all the time. I can catch you when I feel like it. You've got to be careful, I think, if you're the league, not to put it out there so much that I feel like I can always catch it, because that takes from me having to watch it when it's on.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know how you dial that up, but you got to figure it out.
You've been to buffet restaurants, right? How many times do you have every item at the buffet?
Right. Never.
There's only a few gluttons that will have everything, when a little bit of everything, when they walk in there. And I think, you know, people are picking and choosing. So one interesting thing I saw before we move on to Broncos-Texans, I saw the ratings and the shares. The Broncos' local ratings are down, I think, by 1 point, but the share is up. Local ratings, people watching their team, that's unaffected. I think where the ratings hit is coming, and the share hit is coming, but not as much as the ratings, is people saying, I'm watching only my team. I only have time to watch my team, and maybe I'm not as interested in being a neutral observer when the Bears and Packers play. Whereas the league, the NFL, used to have great success getting people to watch games that didn't involve their team. It's something the league has to, I think, take a hard look at, because we've seen it in other sports that people are fans of their team and don't necessarily watch everyone else. I mean, Major League Baseball in particular has become a sport that is local. It's as big as it's ever been locally in each market. But how many Rockies fans are watching Dodgers Cubs?
Well, and you know what else I think is the interesting? Here's the interesting kind of sidebar to this in my mind. DraftKings and FanDuel aren't what they used to be. Why would I watch a neutral game that I didn't have an interest in if it wasn't local? Because I had a fantasy player going and I picked a daily fantasy lineup. They don't seem to be out there. Now, I don't know. Maybe they're still revving at the same level. Doesn't feel that way. I'm not one of those consumers that plays that anyway. But I wonder with them going through whatever legal stuff they've got going on and thus pulling it back a little bit from their involvement with things, how that's affected. Are you watching a national game that you don't otherwise have a need to?
And another thing, let's say you play ESPN or Yahoo Fantasy, who's running your league. Those NFL as well, they all have apps to where you can just look on your phone and you can get live scoring and see exactly what's going on. So let's say you're the mom or dad with two kids on a Sunday and you're looking at your fantasy and you're following your fantasy teams. But are you going to take the kids to the park on a beautiful Sunday and or stay at home and watch the game, knowing that you can get your fantasy updates right there by looking down while Junior, your daughter, is on the swing?
Yeah, they've got it. I think the ratings thing has to be reworked, too, to be quite honest with you, because I know we deal with it in radio. We have a flawed rating system. I'm not sure that the TV one is perfect, to your point. Look, last night we were in a bar doing our show. I had the Cubs game on in front of me. I wanted to watch Packers-Bears, so I pulled it up on Twitter.
I did.
Are you rating it on Twitter yet?
I did that as well. I was actually here in the office, and I couldn't really see the television. I actually had my iPad first on Miami, Virginia Tech. My brother went to Tech. I'm a Tech fan. And then Packers-Bears. And I just had on my iPad, I had Packers-Bears coming through on Twitter on my iPad. And going beyond that, let's say you have Apple TV, okay? You can watch your local game on an Apple TV, on Fox or NBC Sunday Night. You can use your Apple TV or your Roku box. You can use the app on your phone in the same way. I wonder if we've really figured out a proper measurement of that. And I think you're going to have to start looking at the audience across all platforms, not just traditional television, because people are going away from traditional TV.
Yeah, it's crazy. Kids watch things on their phone, and I don't know how they do it, but I have a 4K screen on my laptop.
Yeah.
It was like I was at home on my laptop.
I have a couple of Apple TVs on my television, and actually I was watching, I think it was Boise State, BYU, late last night, and I chose to watch it on the Apple TV because I had a 4K TV and the resolution was higher and it just looked, it popped. It was beautiful. But those are big picture things.
And not really our problems, right?
No, but
not our pay grade.
But it's not our pay grade, but as football connoisseurs,
it affects us.
It affects us, and certainly, you know, you want to see the game continue to evolve and thrive and adapt to changing cultural mores. So on to this week, and of course, it's been a long week, like you said. It seems like it's been forever since the Broncos played.
And we still have a weekend to go before they play again.
Yeah, it's only a football Thursday, even though it's a Friday. Actually, I just yesterday, I didn't know what day it was. My daughter goes to preschool on Monday, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And I walk down in the kitchen on Thursday morning. I'm like, shouldn't you be dressed? And then I'm like, no, wait, no, you're not going to school today. We're all creatures of habit, and we're all a bit off. But, you know, to the Broncos, it's a Friday, but today it's a Thursday of them, even though it's a Friday on the calendar. Thursday practice, they'll have their Friday practice on Saturday. And I'm not going to say must win, but certainly after what happened with two losses in 5 days and the way they lost, this is one the Broncos really need to have.
I don't know that we can really mince words on this one. I'm like you. I'm not a panicker. It's a long season. I think people forget that. I don't tend to bleed with every week the way I think we do in town. I think, if nothing else, last year should have taught the fans you can't overreact to any one given Sunday. But I will say this. This is now going to be the third or fourth defense that you and I have sat in here and talked about and said they're down. Beat up secondary. Should be able to take advantage of it. I think it's important not only that you win this game, but I think the offense needs to have a good showing. I think you need to put up, you know, points like you did in Tampa. Now, they got help from the defense to get to that point total in Tampa. But I think it's time. The offense is due for a good game. It's going to start with the offensive line. They got to get the running game going again. But again, This is a tough front seven. They can rush the passer, so you're going to have to be on your P's and Q's.
It's tough even without J.J. Watt.
That's right. Merciless and Clowney are no joke.
Yeah.
But there's a secondary that's missing a lot of key players, and you need to take advantage of it.
You need to take advantage of that secondary. And also, although the pass rush for the Texans appears relatively unaffected by the injuries up front, they are giving up 126.3 yards a game on the ground and 4.2 yards per carry. You need to be able to run the ball in this game. The Broncos, you know, this offense is not going to work long term unless you have a viable running game. Now, it was at this point last year, after six games, that the running game began to find its footing. The Broncos had a top quarter of the league running game from the Packers game last year onward. They need to start making that step, preferably Monday night, because if you don't have balance, if you don't have the running game to set up the play action and keep the defense on its toes, you're going to have problems. This offense will not move the ball, and it'll have more games like it had the last 2 weeks.
And you're going to need that run game as you continue to go along through the year. The second half of the season, which we're about to hit the halfway mark just after Halloween here, features five road trips. When you get to November, you start November with an Oakland road trip and a New Orleans road trip. Then you have your bye week, and then you have one home game with Kansas City. Then it's back to two more road trips. So you've got to have this thing humming a little more smoothly and getting the running game going, because defense travels, but so does your run game. You know, I don't know. It's funny because you think of Tennessee, I don't think of snow and sleet and all that kind of stuff, but it can get pretty cold there. You don't know what kind of weather conditions you're going to be dealing with.
That game already feels like to me it's going to be 45 and rain.
Right.
The miserable December kind of day that you sometimes get in the upper south.
And don't forget the Patriots still are looming. That's the other big picture part of this that you do have to look at. You now have two losses. The Patriots have one. You thought maybe the Steelers could apply another loss this week, but now they're without Ben Roethlisberger. Things are kind of shaking out their way in the early going despite the four-game suspension of Tom Brady. You can't afford to fall too far back in the loss column because you don't know how many more are coming New England's way.
Yeah, I mean, I think you got a little bit of a break in the short term because Kansas City did upset Oakland last week. That knocked them two losses. But you look at Kansas City's next few games. The Chiefs might go on a run like they did last year after their 1-5 start. It's a pretty soft schedule until they come to Denver on Thanksgiving weekend.
Look, and that's a scary team. I'll be honest with you. I'm more a guy that hates the Chiefs more than the Raiders of late, because the Raiders just haven't been anything. You've battled for the Chiefs for more important stuff than you have the Raiders. Uh-huh. That's a team with good backs that catch out of the backfield and tight ends. Two of the things that we'll see how the adjustments are made to stop those. But that's a team that even last year, let's not forget, everyone remembers the Denver game. You found a way to win the game in KC. They still put up a lot of points on your best defense in franchise history.
Mm-hmm. It was 24, but seven. Remember, there was a defensive touchdown, so it was 17, and then they came to Denver, of course, and they were up 29-0 by the start of the fourth quarter. And that game, you look back at their running backs making plays out of the backfield, even though they didn't have Jamal Charles. A lot of the yardage is coming from backs out of the backfield and Travis Kelce.
So, yeah, I agree with you. It feels like a must-win, and let's be honest about it. We haven't even talked about the elephant in the room, which is your old quarterback deciding to return here. We're on a floor in this building that shares some executive offices, mm-hmm. and I know those executive offices do not want to see 17 come in here and notch a win against this squad. I think this one's going to be a little bit personal this time around, and maybe that dies down when it's all said and done. But I think, you know what, it's funny because Brock, I think, has said a lot of the right things. The only thing, if I were Brock, that I think you should have taken back, even though it's page one of the cliche handbook, mm-hmm. the thing I think some guys remember around here, especially defensively, is the comment, I feel coming to Houston gives me the best chance to win. And again, that's why you say, mm-hmm. you don't want to tell anybody, yeah, I took the extra $10 million or whatever. But that was one comment where I'm sure he didn't think about it at the time, but I think a few people remember it here, and he's going to wish they didn't come Monday night.
Yeah, and I think it's funny. There were some players who weren't aware of that, but in media sessions this week, local reporters did make the players aware of Brock Osweiler's comments. So you know everyone in that locker room is aware of that. And that's the soundbite that I think has legs. I mean, you know, Brandon Marshall saying, oh, we want to kill Brock Osweiler. I mean, he doesn't mean that literally, A. And B, you know, They this defense likes to get after the quarterback, and they're competitive. That there was nothing. It was a funny soundbite, but there was really nothing to it. But saying, "Hey, I think Houston gives me the best chance for long term success," you know, that's something that's going to get that can and probably should get under the skin of guys in that locker room, especially on that defense. Because although Osweiler did do some good things, the defense was carrying the team last year and carrying the team when Brock Osweiler started. And I recall a game against Oakland when defense holds Oakland to 15 points, actually 13 because there was a safety, and the offense can only get 12 and didn't get a touchdown. And the defense, you know, you don't like to start pointing fingers this side versus that side, but the defense did its job that day.
Yeah, it's look, I think Brock would have done himself also a huge favor. Just show up at one of these off-season events. Just show up and show Peyton Manning a little bit of respect. You don't have to act like you guys are best friends. I don't know whether you were or not, but the bottom line is you didn't have to show up for everything. Whether it was the White House trip or the ring ceremony, make one appearance with the guys you want to ring with.
I understand what he's getting at. Oh, I'm focused on OTAs, my new team. Unless there's something really weird with Bill O'Brien and the Texans, I think he would have been excused to go to the White House.
The White House is the one I think that's weird for a lot of people.
Yes. There's not a team or a coach in this league that doesn't understand that when, no matter who the President Obama, President Bush, President Bill Clinton in the 90s, doesn't matter who's in office, how often do you get invited to meet the president at the White House?
Right.
That is something you have to consider as a once-in-a-lifetime deal. And, I mean, you know, Dan Trevathan, Malik Jackson, David Bruton Jr., not one of them had a problem getting there, and it was certainly considered a justifiable absence from OTAs to go do that. And I know the Broncos have, over the years, let players go with excused absences to go celebrate the championship they won the previous year. It's, you know, so I don't know. I don't buy that excuse. I know what Osweiler was trying to convey, but I don't really buy it. To me, you know, I would have made the decision to go, but I'm not him.
At the end of the day, he gets to own up for all of it, and now it really is an interesting time because I thought this would be more Osweiler-centric, and certainly we've had our fair share of that. But honestly, man, this is two teams, Monday night, both need a win. The Broncos get back on track, and Houston to prove that their last win wasn't a fluke.
And the other thing with Osweiler, to touch on him one more time, on the positive side, one thing he did do very well was lead comebacks.
Yep.
14-point comeback against New England, 14-point comeback against Cincinnati last year. And watching the Texans against the Colts on Sunday brought back memories of those comebacks. I mean, for whatever reason, he is at his best. Actually, I believe his rating is something like 34 points higher when he's down 1 to 14 points in the second half compared with every other scenario. For some reason, when he's behind the second half, Brock Osweiler plays his best football.
Because what do you got to lose? Although I will say the last drive and the throw to the tight end that got them the game winner, mm-hmm. or the game tie, whatever it was, mm-hmm. looked like the throw to Owen Daniels,
yep.
to get the game tied against Cincinnati,
yep.
when much bigger stakes were on the line.
And it's not like defense, they're playing back. They're not doing, you know, when you're, if it's a one or two score game, unless it's two scores very late, they're not going against prevent defenses. So it's not a product of Brock Osweiler facing soft defenses. It's just simply for whatever reason, maybe it's going up tempo. The Cincinnati game last year, up tempo. Last Sunday, when Houston was behind, really went up tempo. Maybe he's one of those quarterbacks who's far more comfortable, you know, getting the snap at 15 seconds than taking your time.
That could be it. I also just think there's also something to it where he didn't have time to think. I think that helped him, and they weren't rushing the same way, quite honestly. And look, let's be honest, that's not a good Indianapolis
But the Colts,
defense.
It's not a good defense.
They lost some guys, too. I mean, again, that's almost why I say
But Cincinnati's defense last year was a good defense.
It was. No, it was, but he had better – I think he had a better supporting cast. Well, maybe not. It's tough to say. I'll take Emmanuel and DT over his two young guys. I think DeAndre Hopkins demands the ball too much, but not everybody would agree with me there, so – it's fine. You know what? It's going to be an interesting time, Andrew, and I'm just happy we'll have another game to talk about next week because, again, it feels like it's been an eternity.
And a big game this weekend and Ring of Fame weekend as well with, you know, Simon Fletcher, Jason Elam, John Lynch all going to the Ring of Fame. So it's a significant weekend for the Broncos, and you don't, you know, the league tries to market this type of weekend as homecoming, so fine. You don't want to lose your homecoming game.
No, I agree with you. You don't want to lose your homecoming team or your homecoming game, especially to a team that has your old quarterback on it. So.
Yeah, Brock Osweiler's homecoming, as it were.
Yeah, he's going to join all the other guys flying into town. Although Simon Fletcher is a guy that's just up the road. He's not flying into town at all.
He
I
just
had, can go get some barbecue from him.
Yeah, exactly. You just got to close the barbecue shop or leave it in the hands of one of your understudies.
He said he's closing it down for 5 days to feed everybody coming in. Then he's going to reopen it.
All right, thanks for your time, Andy. Plenty more to come here on the Denver Broncos podcast.
I mean, it's like Dirk Nowitzki, Steve Nash.
Welcome back to the AFC West Roundup. This is Eric Dalala, and this week I am all by myself bringing you what's happening in the AFC West. No Andrew Mason with me this week. We know it's been a little bit since the Broncos last played a football game, that Thursday night game against San Diego, and then a break all the way until Monday against the Texans. So we're definitely ready to get going again here. But the real question is, how's the rest of the AFC West doing? We'll start at the top of the division. We know Oakland's tied up there at the top with the Broncos. And they've got their game this week against Jacksonville in Jacksonville. It's going to be an interesting stretch for them because they're going to stay in Florida this week between their game against Jacksonville and their game next week against Tampa. You know, I think we're going to really find out a lot about this team over the coming week. It's not easy to stay focused during that week-long trip. We just saw the Falcons do it. They came to Denver and then went to Seattle. Close game against Seattle. I think they handled that well, but that's a good team, and we'll see if the Raiders are able to do the same thing. So I'll be interested to watch that, first of all. And then, you know, Jacksonville has played decent, and Tampa Bay is certainly no slouch. So I think we'll learn a lot about the Raiders and whether they're ready to compete in this division. They could easily be 6-2 going into that matchup against the Broncos in a few weeks in Oakland, but they could easily be 4-3, you know? 4-4. So we'll really see what happens there. Interested to see that. In terms of the Chiefs, they got the Saints coming up. Right now the Chiefs are 12th against the pass in the league. They've looked pretty impressive. Marcus Peters, obviously one of the best defenders right now in the league. But the Saints, Drew Brees, no slouch at all. Brandon Cook's coming in. He's going to be a big threat that they'll have to shut down. They looked really good against the Raiders. That wasn't kind of a fluke win. The Chiefs just took it to them the entire time. And they kind of reminded everyone, look, the Broncos are the reigning division champs. The Raiders are kind of this up-and-coming team. But the Chiefs have something to say about this division, too. And so I think it'll be really interesting to see in the coming weeks how they do. It all starts this week against the Saints. And then finally, San Diego. You know, they're on the road against Atlanta, a 4-2 football team. It's pretty good. Got Matt Ryan, obviously, leading the league in passing. Julio Jones, pretty impressive as well. But I think people are kind of underrating San Diego a little bit. I don't think that the Broncos played particularly well in San Diego, but part of it is that San Diego is a good football team. They could easily have a winning record. They could easily be up there in the AFC West standings. Now, do I think they're going to make that push? Not necessarily, just because I think they have too many injuries to do that. But this is a good football team, and if Atlanta overlooks them, they could easily get knocked off, and that's kind of what I think is going to happen this week. So, again, Raiders at Jacksonville, Chiefs hosting the Saints, and the Chargers on the road in Atlanta. I think it's quite possible that all three division teams pick up wins and stay in the hunt with the Broncos, who I think will also beat the Texans. Check back next week. We'll have another AFC West Roundup. But on your Horsin' Around podcast, this has been Eric Dalala.
I wondered about my outfit. I'm going hunting right after this. So. Or I just broke out of prison, one or the other.
That was defensive coordinator Wade Phillips just joking around about his color rush gear. This is Caroline Disley with the Week 7 edition of the Sound Recap. The Broncos are looking to turn things around after coming off a 2-game losing skid. They're facing a few familiar faces as the Houston Texans come to town for Monday Night Football.
Monday Night games, you know, it's the only game on. And everybody knows about Monday Night Football. I've been watching Monday Night Football since I was a little tadpole. So it's, you know, it's special for me, and it's going to be special on Monday.
Earlier this week, head coach Gary Kubiak returned after taking the week off due to a complex migraine issue. Everyone, including the head coach, said they were just happy to have him back.
Welcome back, coach.
Y'all mean that?
Look how
smart you are. Well, it's good to be back.
One focus for the Broncos' offense Monday night will be getting the run game back on track. C.J. Anderson says for him, it all comes down to just making plays.
It definitely hasn't been where we want it to be, but just excited, man. I'm excited to have another opportunity with my guys out there. Definitely get some continuity back on the O-line. Everybody get gelling with myself, too. You know, I kind of told myself, no matter what it looked like this week, as a playmaker, I got to find a way to make plays. So that's in the back of my head, too. So if it's clean, I'll make plays. And if it's not clean, just make plays.
Well, I don't think you can point at anyone. I mean, we didn't perform very good as a group, coaches included. So we're all trying to get on the same page. We worked really hard the last couple of days. One more good day, and we'll go out and make some improvements. That's what we're counting on, everybody improving. Because if you sit around and say, well, it was all one person's fault, or nobody gets better. So if we all take those strides and get better, then we will get better as a group.
And the Broncos will get the chance to do just that on primetime Monday Night Football. That's it for this week's Sound Recap. I'm Caroline Dizer. We'll be back next week after the Broncos beat the Texans.
Welcome back to Horsing Around, the DenverBroncos.com podcast. Ben Hunt here with your fantasy segment in the podcast. I'm very happy to be joined by none other than Romy Bean. Romy, great to have you back on the podcast.
Thanks for having me back. I thought I lost my spot here, so I thought I gave some bad advice last time. So I'm glad I'm here to redeem myself.
We just like to spread the love around a little bit on the podcast. Definitely appreciate all your advice and help for our fantasy owners out there.
Well, all right. Hopefully I can help again.
All right. So how's it looking for this week for you in fantasy? What do you like? What are you seeing out there for some must plays for the listeners?
Well, I got to say, if your fantasy lineup right now kind of looks like, quarterback, injured running back, injured running back, injured wide receiver, injured tight end. Don't worry, you're not alone. Like the rest of us. Kind of at that time of year where a lot of the big guys you picked up are injured, so people are scrambling. It's been kind of a weird last week or two now trying to find the chemistry with who they're with. And then, of course, if you have Ben Roethlisberger, well, now he's out too. So a lot of injuries making things complicated. I would say a couple things. So if, this is we're a week past or a day past, if you will, but Ty Montgomery for the Green Bay Packers filled in a lot yesterday. He got about over 12 points in fantasy. He's a wide receiver for the Packers, but he's also filling in the backfield now that Eddie Lacy, put on too much weight and isn't there again. So I would look for Ty Montgomery. He's not owned in a ton of leagues. Pick him up even for next week. He had some good production yesterday in the game against the Bears. And then I'd say a couple people to look for this week is these are my sleepers for this week. Jaquizz Rodgers, Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
I was going to ask you about that Buccaneers running back situation there. So yeah, Jaquizz Rodgers.
So I think he's if he's available, pick him up. He's Doug Martin. It does have an imminent return, but not sure exactly when. But even then, he seems to have the trust of the coaches, and I think that he's going to now share some work there with Doug Martin. Either way, in the backfield, whether Doug Martin's there or not, so I would definitely pick him up. And they're going to be slowly working Doug Martin back into the backfield. So I feel like Rodgers is going to be the running back that they lean on for at least right now for kind of while they work Doug Martin back in. He's not owned in a ton of leagues, so that is definitely one that I would definitely pick up.
And favorable matchup. Right, they're going against the 49ers this week, who have been getting shredded on the ground for fantasy purposes. Just a really good, if your running back's going to carry the rock, the Niners aren't a bad team to go up against.
Absolutely. The 49ers, they've allowed almost 175 rushing yards a game, like you said. So, last week the Bills netted 312 yards. So that's kind of a good trivia number. But it could be really good for the Buccaneers this week. And so I would definitely say this is a week Jaquizz Rodgers becomes a top option. You can even put him there in your number one while Doug Martin's still sidelined.
You brought up the Bills. Interesting situation up there with the possibility of, you know, losing, you know, their top runner and Shady McCoy. It looks like he might be a game time decision. I think we just got an alert about. But Mike Gillisley, been, you know, toting the ball pretty good up there. What do you think about him this week if I needed to replace Shady McCoy in my lineup?
I do think it's, like you said, you got to wait because it could be a game time decision. Also, take it with the caveat that, again, the Bills, you know, the 49, like the Bills last week, they had a great game. The Bills are coming up. I don't know. I still don't totally believe in the Bills' consistency. I'm waiting for the crash. but they are playing the Dolphins this They're playing the Patriots. No, they're not. They're playing the Dolphins.
No, they have the Dolphins. Yeah, they're in Miami.
Okay. So with the, we just talked about how awful the 49ers are, you know, on defense. So they're going to be facing a Dolphins team, same division. They're familiar with each other. I don't think we're going to see this crazy production like we saw last week, a 45-point game from the Bills. So I would be a little more hesitant to throw in another Bills guy just because they're playing the Dolphins. Next week, the week after, they're playing the Patriots and then the Seahawks. So if Shady McCoy is not in, I wouldn't go rushing to pick up someone else from the Bills, just if you look at who they're playing in the next 3 weeks, my personal opinion.
How about that tight end spot? You were saying, you know, looking for some either some streamers or somebody to put in there if you're beat up. Anybody out there on the waiver wire that you might particularly like, you know, to help catch balls over the middle there in the tight end?
Yes, there's I have Zach Ertz. Now, he's not hurt, but he, you know, just another guy that you kind of have big hopes for at the end of the season. And I've been looking around, and someone I actually just picked up is Cameron Bright, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He doesn't seem to be picked up in too many leagues. And he was second last week on the team with five red zone targets. So, you know, he wasn't involved that much at the beginning of the season because they were using Austin Seferian Jenkins a lot more. We've seen an increase in his production, I think. And I would go with him over Jack Doyle because I think we've been seeing some good things about him. And I think he could be a little bit of a sleeper. So Jack Doyle, obviously tight end for the Colts, is another one that you could pick up as well, or kind of just waiting. Him is an injury-dependent thing as well, similar to Shady McCoy. But he could be a good stash player because, depending on injuries, he may see a lot of production as well. So I'd say Jack Doyle or Cameron Brate are two tight ends that if you don't have anyone, if someone's hurt, pick them up, and they could hopefully help you out. I'm hoping Cameron Brate helped me out. I think that him and Jameis Winston have some good chemistry.
Well, Romy, last thing I got for you is we talked about who you like. Anybody, any matchups this week that you would particularly want to stay away from, other than we already talked about the Bills situation, but anything else out there that you just really don't like for this upcoming Week 7?
You know, I think you're looking at the Eagles playing the Vikings. That's going to be two defenses going up against each other. And actually, when you look at I'd sit both Zach Ertz, who on the tight end for the
Eagles.
Sorry, I don't know where my brain went. And then on the flip side of the ball, Kyle Rudolph for the Vikings. I would also sit him as well because both the Eagles and the Minnesota Vikings are surrendering very few points. Vikings haven't allowed a touchdown to a tight end this year. And then the Eagles, they've surrendered one touchdown and an average of just about 3 fantasy points per game to tight ends. So if you have Kyle Rudolph, Minnesota, or Zach Ertz for the Eagles, I wouldn't play either of them. That game is going to be, I think, a pretty low-scoring defense crash-and-bash game. So really, any of your Vikings and Eagles players, you may want to be a little – just if you have an option of someone going against someone a little bit easier, I would go for that and sit them.
Well, Romy, that's some great fantasy advice. I'm sure all our listeners out there who play fantasy appreciate it. And, you know, for those who are listening, you can also check out our DraftKings reports on DenverBroncos.com. We have, you know, a league-wide piece and then a Broncos-specific piece on who might be available to play. So you guys might want to check that out. But Romy, thanks again for your time. And we appreciate, you know, all the things that you do for us here at the Broncos.
Thank you so much. And you know what? When you talk about the Broncos, Devontae Booker, if he's not picked up, grab that one.
All right. Thanks, Romy. We appreciate your time.
All right. Thanks, Ben.
Time now for the best portion of this podcast, right?
The Broncos TV portion of the podcast.
The best. I'm Phil Milani with Matt Boyer, and for the next 4 hours, we're going to take you in... No, I'm just kidding.
will feel like a couple of hours.
We'll try to keep it a little bit shorter than that. We're going to be talking about the college football playoff and the Pac-12. Matt, take us away.
All right, so here's the deal. People in this office always say, you know, what are you and Phil going to argue about this week? And we really don't plan anything. We don't come up with anything, you know, staged. Just whatever happens organically. So one day this week, Phil walks into the office, anoints Washington football as the Pac-12's representative in the college football playoff. Is that correct?
Well, here's what we were doing. We're probably making fun of Michigan football, which is what I tend to do often.
You can't do
in the office. We're talking about how it looks like they're destined for just a head-to-head matchup with Ohio State, determining what's going to happen with their playoff hopes.
Right, right.
And I said that if Michigan loses that game, that I'd rather see Washington in the college football playoff if Washington runs the table.
Now,
which is possible because they don't play the Buffs this year.
Right.
So unless it's in the Pac-12 championship.
Well, knock it off, because I don't think that's going to happen. But anyways, so here's what the top five looks like right now in the AP. You've got Alabama 1, Ohio State 2, Michigan 3, Clemson 4, and Washington at 5. Now, the top four teams get into the CFP, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so now you think, okay, if Alabama takes care of business against Texas A&M, this might be a moot point.
That's true.
Or if A&M takes care of business, you know, all bets are off today.
It's very early to be talking about this, but we like to just look way ahead.
Right. But I look at Washington's schedule, okay, and they've only played a couple of teams worth. I mean, they opened with, I mean, good Lord, they opened with Rutgers. I mean, come on.
Rutgers? You guys played Rutgers.
And beat them 78-0. So here's their schedule so far. They've played Rutgers, Idaho. They've played Arizona, Stanford, Oregon. None of these teams.
Look, when you're in a
none
power
of these teams
five,
are worth anything.
When you're in a Power Five conference, you don't need to worry about your non-conference schedule in order to try and make a college playoff.
But you do need to worry about your in-conference.
If you run the table in a Power Five conference, you're in.
But you need to worry about your in-conference schedule, and the in-conference schedule is not good right now.
There's
so there
no
are
doubt
voters
that-
out there that might want to say, okay, if that Ohio State-Michigan game is pretty good, maybe we throw both of those two teams into the CFP ahead of Washington.
There's
or
no way.
If A&M and Alabama, if this game today, we're taping this on a Saturday, goes down to the wire and is a great game and both those teams have one loss,
look, here's what
maybe
could,
both of those teams get in.
Look, if we're talking about this, we're assuming that Washington has run the table and they've won their Pac-12 championship game.
Okay.
Now, if Michigan and Ohio State are both undefeated heading into that final game,
yep,
that means the loser of that game will not play in the Big Ten championship game.
Which is messed up.
So there's no way that a Pac-12 champion undefeated Washington Husky team gets stiffed in favor of a one-loss Michigan team that didn't even play for its conference championship.
Okay, but take Michigan out of it. Think about how tough the SEC is. Okay, we were watching that Alabama A&M game. This is clearly the best conference in college football.
Yes.
So you can make a very good case. It's not going to be A&M and Alabama, but you can make a very good case for why two SEC teams deserve to be in the college football playoff.
It could come from the Big Ten. It just won't be both from the same side. Wisconsin, if they win the Big Ten, 10 championship game,
right,
and like say they beat Ohio State in that game,
right,
or they beat Michigan in that game, that means that they would have got a little bit of revenge on a loss earlier in the year. They could possibly still get in that situation.
I would say right now, I mean, you think about Nebraska. Nebraska also is a team that could, I mean, if they run the table to a Big Ten title, I mean, who knows what happens with regards to whether or not that happens. We're getting score updates here in the window.
That's true.
So I think that Nebraska, let's say Ohio State beats Michigan, okay, but Nebraska beats Ohio State in the college.
It would cause a lot of problems.
Right.
But I still think that Michigan is so good.
Right.
Their offense can score at will.
Thank you.
They can do. I'm sorry. Michigan is good. Washington equally as good, in my opinion. They could score at will, and if they win their conference championship game in the Pac-12, I just think that there's no way that they can keep them out.
I think Washington. It's just the schedule is just not that good.
No doubt that the Pac-12 is down this year. It's not good when Stanford is down, when Oregon is not what it used to be, USC is not where it used to be.
It's so
These
bad.
Schools. I mean, Washington State stumbled to get out of the gate, although they're playing better now, but. Going into the season, we thought some of these teams were going to be pretty good. Turns out they're not as good as their hype was.
Right. I just think that based on how weak the conference is, if the SEC these next couple of weeks, it becomes just kind of a round-robin tournament for the best teams in the country, I think that you can make a very strong case for why Alabama and Team X, we don't know who that is yet, could make it into the college football playoff. Or a team like Nebraska and Ohio State. We'll see. It's still early. It's still very early.
It's very early, but I don't know how you punish an undefeated Washington team. I don't think that's going
to
happen.
All right.
Let's get to the NFL. Let's get to the rest of the AFC West, which is now very competitive. Ugh. Broncos and Raiders both have 4-2 and Kansas City at 3-2.
Yep.
The Chiefs have the Saints at home this week.
Okay, so I looked at this. Arrowhead, you've been there. You know how hard it is. To play in Arrowhead. I think the Saints are coming off a big Panthers victory. I think that they're riding high a little bit, but I really like what I see from that Kansas City defense. I think Andy Reid has them rolling again, similar to the way we saw them roll at the end of last year. Alex Smith is playing well. I think they've kind of got it clicking and figured things out. I like Kansas City.
Yeah, I like Kansas City for the biggest reason. They're at home.
Yeah.
That's such a tough place to play because I can't really figure this team out because they lose to Houston. They get blown out by Pittsburgh. But then last week, gosh, they played awfully tough against the Raiders on the road.
But if you look at that Pittsburgh game, I mean, Pittsburgh has a defense that kind of mimics KC's in the way that they like to get after the football. They play very tough in the passing game. So I think that based on just that score alone, I kind of like Kansas City, the way the matchup works as far as in the favor of the Chiefs.
So we both got Kansas City
yes,
there.
We
Moving
do.
On, Oakland at Jacksonville.
So this one was tough because cross-country road trips for West Coast teams usually spell favor for the East Coast team. That's a tough trip to make for any team, whether that be in the AFC West or the NFC West. I think that last week, I liked Jacksonville in this matchup up until I saw the way they played the Bears last week. I thought the Bears are probably one of the three worst teams in football right now. That's just the way their season has
Shots
gone.
Fired.
Well, just based on the record too, right? I mean, it's just they are not having a great season. They've had some injuries. At running back, they've been a little bit banged up, but they're not playing that well right now. And I think Jacksonville had a lot of trouble with that Bears team. I think that Oakland's going to come in and take care of business. I think Derek Carr is starting to come on with his receivers Crabtree and Cooper. I just
they
like
only scored 10 points last week.
But I think the chemistry is there. I think that they're getting things working a little bit. I think every team has an off week, right?
That's true. Before
that week. It seemed to me like they had things clicking. They just kind of hurt themselves in certain situations. So I like the Raiders.
I'm taking Jacksonville in this one. Jacksonville favored by 1.5. So it's pretty much a toss-up at this point. I like Jacksonville. I think Blake Bortles, that offense, can overcome the Raiders' defense. I'm going with Jacksonville in this
All
one.
All right.
And then our final game, San Diego at Atlanta.
It's hard for me. Now, listen. Us sitting here today, it's hard for us to knock the Chargers because they beat the Broncos last week. We had a front row seat for that, and that was a tough game. Now, what I will say about that game is I think Phillip Rivers on a short week is probably one of the hardest teams to game or one of the hardest quarterbacks to game plan against. I think that matchup, us going or the Broncos going to San Diego, was probably a perfect scenario for Mike McCoy and that offense to take advantage of some weaknesses in, you know, just being able to prepare for a team like San Diego. San Diego, despite what their record says, is a very good football team. That being said, I think that they're going to have trouble with Atlanta just based on how Atlanta played Seattle last week, how they played the Broncos the week before. I just think that they have things rolling. We argued a lot about that pass interference call at the end of the Seattle-Atlanta game. I think that had that PI call been made, I think that that game is totally different.
Different outcome,
right?
Sure.
Probably. And so I think that Atlanta right now is probably, you have to put them in the conversation for one of the best teams in football, and for that reason, I like the Falcons over the Chargers.
These are the two teams the Broncos have faced the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
We know them both very well. I think Atlanta's really rolling. That offense is so tough to stop. You take away Julio Jones, the running backs come alive. Mohamed Sanu is there, so I think the offense is really difficult to defend. San Diego is way better than their record.
Yeah.
They've lost games by like a point, 2 points, 3 points here or there. Easily they could be at the top of the AFC West, but I think that traveling across the country, an Atlanta team that's upset about that PI call, I think Atlanta gets the job done. They're favored by 6, and I'm going to take Atlanta there.
One thing that I will say about that San Diego team, it was just so impressive for me to be on the field and see how quickly Phillip Rivers gets that ball out, because the Broncos pass rush, I mean, Von Miller's no slouch, right? Derek Wolfe, no slouch. I mean, these guys like to get to the quarterback, and they have gotten to the quarterback with success throughout the beginning of this year. So for Phillip Rivers to get that ball out just quick, just zipping passes to guys like Benjamin, he found Hunter Henry plenty of times too. I think that if they can get a win here, that totally changes things around. They'll be coming to Denver the following week. If they can get a if they can string together a couple of wins here,
they'll be hot.
Right, the AFC West is very much up for grabs.
In San Diego, boy, Joey Bosa,
yeah,
he's really coming on. He's a force to be reckoned with. Hunter Henry, they have a lot of young talent on that team that's getting better every single week. So that'll be an interesting matchup down there. But I think that'll wrap up the Broncos TV portion of this podcast.
The best portion of the podcast.
That's right. I was waiting. I just queued it up right there. You knocked it out. That's going to do it for Matt Boyer. I'm Phil Maligny, and that's been the best portion of the podcast.
See ya.
The best.